Hey YA! From great new books to favorite classic reads, news stories to the latest and on-screen adaptations, Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA is a book riot podcast hosted by Erica Azafetti and me, Tears of Praise. And we are recording this one a little bit early because it is June 20th right now. But hello, Erica, and how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm very appreciative of us recording early. The reason we're recording early is because I'm taking a week off for my birthday.
Woo-woo!
Yes! And I'm planning a trip to Florida for to visit my friend. I know! I
No, that was an excited ew, even if Florida is a little messy right now.
No, I debated going because it's Florida. There are a few reasons. No shade to, native Floridians. No shade or anything. But it's really hot and I don't like heat. But my birthday is literally like the peak of summer. But I haven't seen my friend, who is my really good friend, for a while. And we have a birthday, our birthdays are days apart. And I was like, I want to go visit him. And that's where he is, so that's where I'm going. And I've never been to Florida, so I feel like it should be fun. It's about to be hot AF, though.
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to the humidity, I have to tell you the truth.
The last time I went to Florida was probably 21 years ago.
Oh.
22 years ago. It's been a while. I was a child. But, it was... I remember it was hot. That's what I remember.
Yeah.
So... but I hope that you have a fun time. That'll be awesome.
Thank you. It should be fun. We were talking about stuff to do, and I'm like, how have I not visited him more? Whatever. But he was like, at one point, he was like, oh, and I want to go to a place to have tea. British. I was like, a man after my own heart.
I love it.
Yes.
It sounds like a fantastic birthday celebration. And
I think so.
Yeah. So you have to tell us how it went next time we record.
Absolutely.
Yay. So, yes, we are recording this early, but you'll hear us in July. So we thought it would be kind of fun to talk about our favorite reads of the year so far. Because it's always kind of fun to take stock. And we were just talking before this episode, we started recording, and I was like, oh my gosh, I never remember anything that I read without my spreadsheet. I am hopeless. It is ridiculous.
Same.
But I've actually read, and sometimes I get down in the dumps like, oh man, I haven't read that much this year. But I was like, wow, I've actually read quite a few books that I've enjoyed. So this is going to be fun. I think it's going to be good. But before we get into it, we want to share a little bit of news because we did not talk about this right when it happened. I think we were kind of in between, on our off episode weeks. But the Lambda Literary Awards were announced, which are always fun because they celebrate LGBTQ literature. They've evolved a lot over the last, I think they've been around for 30 years. But what I love about the Lammies is that they have so many different categories, and it just seems really awesome. So there's, different categories for lesbian and gay fiction, bisexual fiction, transgender fiction, nonfiction poetry, biography, memoir, and then romance too. How many literary awards actually celebrate romance? The answer is not a lot.
Good point, yes.
And then for the children's, they kind of do this thing that I don't always love where they just kind of combine a lot of the children's awards, but at least they have different categories for children's books, middle grade, and YA. So, and then they just, so it's a generalized LGBTQ children's, middle grade, YA, as well as comics, drama, and mystery. But the young adult winner is one of my favorite books of last year, The Lesbiana's Guide to Catholic School by Sonora Reyes. So I'm not really sure where they're going to stick that medal on the book cover because the book cover is getting a little crowded.
Listen, the flowers, they're given. That's a nice problem to have.
Exactly. It was there's been a couple of book covers where I'm are they going to have to redesign the cover just to fit all the award stickers? That is a good problem to have. But
absolutely.
Yes. So Lesbiana's Guide to Catholic School. I love that this one is still getting all of the attention and accolades because it's such a great book.
I need to get on that. And I say that every time. But, you know, the way, the nature of the TBR and / mood reader things, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, I get it. I totally do. So, yeah. So if you do not follow the Lammy Awards, or you just haven't paid attention before, like, definitely give the award winners a look over. I have to say, I also read the LGBTQ+ Mystery Award winner, Dirt Creek, by Haley Scrivener. I loved it. So there's some really good stuff in there.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, that's an adult book, but it was still really awesome. So
I do love a mystery.
Yeah, it was awesome. So that is our news item. And first, before we, you know, go on, we're going to hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Avid Reader Press. So this next book is a really fun sounding mashup of different genres. There's a little time travel, a little romance, a little spy thriller action going on. So in the near future, a civil servant is offered the salary of her dreams and is shortly afterward told what project she'll be working on. A recently established government ministry is gathering quote unquote expats from across history to establish whether time travel is feasible for the body, but also for the fabric of space-time. This is an exquisitely original and feverishly fun fusion of genres and ideas. The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley asks, what does it mean to defy history when history is living in your house? Colleen Bradley's answer is a blazing, unforgettable testament to what we owe each other in a changing world. It kind of gives Outlander meets Cloud Atlas, or if The Time Traveler's Wife was written by Sally Rooney or Colson Whitehead. Make sure to check out The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley. And thanks again to Avid Reader Press for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Sourcebooks Landmark. So King Solomon says something very interesting to his son before he dies, and that is, quote, don't let the white man take the house, end quote. These, as I just mentioned, are King Solomon's last words to his son as he dies. Now, all four Solomon siblings must return to North Carolina to save the kingdom, their ancestral home, and 200 acres of land from a development company. Told in alternating viewpoints, Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris is a searing portrait of the power of family and letting go of things that no longer serve you, exploring the burden of familial expectations, the detriment of miscommunication, and the lessons and legacies we pass on to our children. It's an explosive and emotional story of four siblings, each fighting their own personal battle, because who isn't, who return home in the wake of their father's death. Make sure to check out Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris. And thanks again to Sourcebooks Landmark for sponsoring this episode.
All right, so now we're gonna talk about our favorite reads, and I don't know why I made that into like a little bad song, but
I like the jingle. Always jingle with me, Tirza. I appreciate it that it brought some joy into my life.
I'm a terrible singer, but I'm always singing ridiculous things, and it's in part because I'm married to somebody who can come up with like ridiculous jingles on the fly. And I'm always like it. How can you do that? Like, I'm the writer in this relationship, and like, amazing. I cannot do what they can do, where they just like come up with songs for everything. So anyway, that was my sad attempt at jingle for our favorite books of the year so far.
I know that your partner has like a notebook full of cat jingles. I just know it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's
know it. I'm waiting for the musical.
There's a deep catalog there.
Cat.
Along. Cat along. Right. Oh, but I'm bummed. Okay. Wow, we're ridiculous. But we are. Okay, Erica, tell me about one of your favorite books that you've read so far this year.
Okay, so we were also talking about this before we recorded, and Tears, I know when you saw my list, you were like, all right, so not everything is released, has been, not everything on my list basically has been released in 2023.
That's fine.
So yeah, it's going to be a mix of things that were released in 2023 and also just things that I read in 2023 that I really liked. So I will start with The City Beautiful by Aiden Polydoros. I spoke about this one not too long ago. I believe I gushed about it was probably like a better verb. I really liked it. Where do I start? Oh my gosh. So it takes place in Chicago in 1893. It follows a Jewish immigrant. His name is Alter. So his father died on the way over to the U.S., on the way over to Chicago, and he's been trying to, like, survive and send money back to his mom and sisters. And it's rough. It's Chicago in the late 19th century. It's a hot mess for everybody, except for, like, rich people, basically. So he participates in a lot of his community's, like, religious events and stuff like that. But also, he is queer. And so that part of himself, he tries to keep hidden. But then one of his friends, because he lives with, like, three or four other boys in this, like, in tenement housing, basically. And they all, you know, go to work and stuff and try to save and all that. Everyone's trying to survive, basically. So one of his friends goes missing, and then they find out that he has been killed. Well, let me rephrase that. They find him dead. So, and this is at the Chicago World's Fair. And I remember when I first spoke about this, I was like, the only two things I've read about the Chicago World's Fair have been terrible. So it just, like, has a negative connotation in my mind. So I say they found him dead, they being the Chicago Police Department, because they're not really trying to investigate it as a murder, just like an unfortunate death. And a lot of that has to do with, I think, anti-Semitism. So, and also the busyness of the World's Fair. There's a lot going on. I think it's more so still anti-Semitism. They're like, oh, well, you know, I mean, they're not super hateful in that moment. They're not like, oh, well, you know, you deserved it. But how they brush it aside, it's, like, obvious. So he's dealing with that. And then he performs the funeral rites for his friend, which is, you know, probably not the best idea. But in that process, he becomes possessed by his friend's Dybbuk, which is, like, this, like, the part of the spirit of a person, if I remember and understand this part of Jewish culture correctly. It's like the part of you that has unfinished business, and it kind of twists into something that's not really you, kind of like becomes more demonic or something like that. So he becomes possessed by his friends Dybbuk, his departed friends Dybbuk, and it is not going to rest until it gets justice. And we all love a good revenge story. I mean, you know, it's inconvenient for him to be possessed. Yes. So while he's trying to, again, survive, go about his day, send money back home, you know, all of that good stuff, he's having to deal with this second, like, soul in his body, basically. So this is part Jewish folklore. It's part horror. There's a murder mystery in it because they try to find out who killed his friend, and other Jewish boys are turning up dead. And then there's also some interesting, like, kind of with historical fiction. I love historical fiction because I actually learn about, like, real historical events. So there are some interesting tidbits I learned about journalism and kind of, like, I don't know if anarchist is the correct word, but just how journalists and stuff were helping people, like helping workers and stuff like that. So we also learn about how immigrants lived back then, especially Jewish immigrants, how a lot of them had to survive. You learn about the Chicago World's Fair. There's a lot. This book is like 500 pages, which I didn't realize because I had it on ebook. So there's a lot here. And there are twists, there are turns. Like I said, it gives for the girls. So it just gives. So The City Beautiful by Aiden Polydoros. Pick it up.
Amazing.
Yes.
Yes. This is like the second or third time I've listened to you talk about how good this book is. So I'm excited. Yay. Yes. My first pick is Enter the Body by Joy McCullough. And I think I talked about this book on the show already this year, but holy cow, this book is so, so good. So imagine, if you will, that there is a stage And beneath the stage, there's a trapdoor on the stage, and underneath the trapdoor is this, you know, sort of stage basement where all of Shakespeare's dead female characters are just lurking, hanging out.
Oh, I got a tangle.
Yeah. And they're not really talking with each other or interacting in any way, but like they're all just down there. And they're obviously not having a great time because they've been killed in really horrific ways. And even if the method of killing isn't horrific, it's pretty unfair. And so this book is about what happens when Juliet, Ophelia, and Cordelia start talking, and Lavinia is sort of, you know, she can't talk because her tongue is cut out.
Oh my god.
Spoiler alert for Titus Andronicus, but yeah, and they, the four of them are all just kind of in the same vicinity, and Juliet just starts talking, and she starts sharing her story, and it sparks this sort of conversation and this interest that these four characters have where, you know, Juliet tells her story, then Ophelia tells her story, and then Cordelia tells her story. And then they start talking with one another about, like, how their stories played out, how unfair their stories are. They kind of, you know, reference the bard as, like, you know, why did he have to do us dirty like this, basically? And then as they start talking through this, they start imagining what their stories could have been. And it's such a weird yet wonderful and moving book. I think, you know, you don't necessarily have to have read all of the plays. So obviously Juliet's from Romeo and Juliet, Ophelia's from Hamlet, Cordelia's from King Lear. Lavinia, we don't really hear from her because, again, the no tongue thing makes it hard for her to speak. But she's from Titus Andronicus. And you don't have to have read all of these plays to really get their stories because they kind of recap their own stories really nicely. So in some ways, it's a retelling. It's a retelling of these three plays from their points of view. But if you have read some of these plays, I think that like the story is like that much more powerful because it's really interesting to see how they twist and turn their stories and reimagine their roles and just like talk about like their own autonomy and their own choices. It was a really brilliant book. I was so amazed by it. And I took Shakespeare in college and I've read a lot of Shakespeare plays and seen a lot of Shakespeare performances. And I was just like, this is one of the best sort of Shakespeare, calling it an adaptation or a retelling isn't quite accurate, but it's one of the best sort of Shakespearean novels that I've ever read. I actually sent my copy to my Shakespeare professor and I was like, you must read this.
That's awesome.
So I don't know if she has yet, but oh my gosh, such a good book. It's really weird. It's maybe a little bit niche when it comes to like topic and interest, but is obviously one of the best books I've read this year. And like, even just thinking about that book again, I'm like, I would read that book over and over again, just to kind of like dig into like the craft of it. So that is Enter the Body by Joy McCullough.
Isn't the novel in verse also, or no? Do I misremember? Yeah. Okay. I remember us. Yeah.
But yeah. So like half of it is, well, not half of it. Like most of it is in verse. So the characters are telling their own stories in verse, which is kind of fun because like each of the verse styles for each of the girls is very different.
Oh.
And that's impressive. And it kind of reflects their personalities and also like the themes of the, and the tone of the plays that they're from. But then half of it is told in like a play format because they are having these conversations together. So you get stage cues and you get, you know, them talking. I mean, I could definitely see this being adapted to the stage really well. So yeah, it was just so good. I'm blown away.
It's moving its way. I have not read all of Shakespeare, but I've read some, but this sounds really good. And it reminds me, I've heard this before in terms of like entertainment, as far as like movies, shows, books, looking at typically marginalized characters, whether they're women or people of color or queer people, etc. And not only seeing if they're present in the story that you're consuming, but also if they interact with each other. I know the Bechdel.
Yeah, the Bechdel test.
Yeah, I know that's one feature of it. It's like, for women, are they present? You know, what kind of voice do they have? And are they interacting with each other? Mm-hmm. Because that apparently is a way to kind of like tokenize people, I feel like. They're there. Tokenizing is, I think, objectifying. But so that's really interesting. Yes. I need to read that also.
It's so good.
Yes. Whew. All right. Bumping that up, the TBR priority. Okay. Next one I have is All My Rage by Sabaa Tahir. And this is the one we read for our book club. And I think you chose it.
Yeah, I think I did, because I thought that it was going to be a prince winner, or it was a prince winner, or something like that.
Yeah, it did. It was. I can speak. Good choice. I really liked it. One of my favorite YA reads so far this year. So just a refresher, if you didn't catch that episode where we discussed it, So most of the story is told in the present time, the present day. Some of it is also told from the past. It follows Noor and Salahuddin. And so this is such an interesting look into like Muslim and Pakistani American lives. So Salahuddin's parents, they run a hotel, and his father suffers from alcoholism. And his mother, Misbah, is sick. And so they're just like struggling. He's getting into some questionable things to try to help with money and stuff like that. And Noor is dealing with her own things. And she wants to get into a good school. But her uncle, who has taken care of her since there was like this really bad earthquake years ago in Pakistan, and like he was like her only family member left. So he brought her to America, and she lives there with his wife and him. So, but the thing is, he doesn't want her to go to college because he feels like he's like sacrificed his youth or opportunities or something like that for her. So he wants to go to school, and he kind of wants her to like stay back. So she keeps her college applications a secret from him, which is counterintuitive for people who genuinely care about you. So that's one indication of things going on. Noor and Salahuddin have been really good friends for a while. It started to kind of turn into something more, but then something funky happened, and Noor got turned off from Sal, which is Salahuddin's shortened version. And as Misbah is Sal's mother. As she gets really sick, she keeps trying to bring Noor like back into their world, back into their house. And Misbah was a way for Noor to kind of re-experience like Pakistani culture and stuff, because her uncle is a hater. Just put that, just like capital H hater, just all around.
He's
awful. He needs to go to jail. There's this gif where it's like this person in a car, and they're like, y'all are going to jail, period. So that applies to him for several reasons. So yeah, Misbah, Sal's mom, gets sick. She eventually passes away. I don't think that's a spoiler, although I don't remember when that happens in the book, but I think it happens fairly early on. So obviously this deals with the loss of a parent, but it also deals with abuse and mental health and being an immigrant and being different. And I think how it deals with things is so, with these heavy topics, it's so well done. And the lead up to revealing what's going on with the main characters is really well done. And I feel like part of it, if I didn't say this before, I don't quite remember, we spoke about it months ago, but it's like we're not told immediately right away what's going on with both of these main characters. We're shown snippets and clues, but mm-hmm. it's like it could be anything. And I like how Sabaa Tahir did that, because that's just like, if if it were going on with, you know, someone you know in real life. Like, we were seeing certain hints and clues as to what was going on, just as we would with, say, a friend or a family member. But we're not psychic, so it's not like the characters revealed immediately, even though we had access to, like, their, you know, inner thoughts and stuff like that. When it was revealed, I was crying, okay? So this is a book if you want to cry, you know. But it was just really well done. It dealt with abuse and grief and different things very well. It's just really well done. So awards, well received. Thank you for recommending we read it, Tirza.
Mm-hmm.
Def one of the best books I've read so far. Probably one of the best I will have read this year. So again, that is All My Rage by Sabaa Tahir.
Awesome. My second pick is probably not going to be surprising considering I started this episode telling you how much I liked The Lesbianist Guide to Catholic School. My second pick is Sonora Reyes's sophomore novel, which is The Luis Ortega Survival Club. And this book, it was hard to read and sweet at the same time. So content warning for discussions of, like, the aftermath of sexual assault. The sexual assault does not happen on the page, but the book starts off, like, in the immediate aftermath of it. So this book is about Ariana. She is neurodiverse and she is selectively mute, and she really does not talk at school hardly at all, because she only ever feels comfortable enough to speak when she's feeling at ease and comfortable with other people. And so for her, that basically means, like, her parents and nobody else. But she really does, like, want to connect with people and sort of want to stand out. And so she has, like, all these really bold fashion choices, and nobody seems to really pay any attention to her because they just know her as the girl who never talks, until this is before the book even starts. Luis Ortega notices her and he seems to really like her, and he doesn't mind that she doesn't really talk so much. And he kind of comes on strong and he invites her to a party. And it's at this party that they have sex, and she does not really give consent, but she's also kind of beating herself up because she's like, I didn't tell him no. And she just kind of, you know, she feels like she just let it happen. And it's, you know, very upsetting to her. And of course, immediately in the aftermath, everybody's talking about the fact that they had sex, and she's deeply embarrassed and ashamed, and she doesn't really understand how that all happened. So she, the first part, half of the book is just, like, her dealing with the fact that everybody is paying attention to her and making assumptions about her. And she's also really scared of Luis's ex-girlfriend, Shawnee, because it seems like Shawnee, everywhere she turns around, there's Shawnee. And she thinks that Shawnee's mad at her because she slept with Luis. And so she's very isolated, trying to figure out what's going on. But then she learns the truth, which is that Luis Ortega is not a nice guy. He, you know, slept with her because it wasn't like she could say no. And he has done this to other people, to other girls in particular. And there is a small group of them at their school who have been wronged by him, either through sexual assault or other horrible acts that he has committed. And so they kind of form this little club. It's an unofficial club where they just kind of hang out and they commiserate. But then they also decide that maybe they want some revenge. They want to expose him for his wrongdoings. And so Ari was, like, a little reluctant at first, but then she kind of gets more and more into the idea. But if she is truly going to, you know, expose him and have him face the consequences, she also is realizing that she has to be completely honest about what happened that night. And for the moment, she's lying about what happened because she doesn't want anybody to know the truth. So that's kind of, like, the heavy part of the book. But then it's also balanced out really nicely with some really sweet moments where Ari is falling in love with the person that she least expects. And it is another girl in this group. And the way it unfolds is really sweet. There's a lot of really good talk about like consent. And like, I think sometimes when we like our society is a lot better about talking about consent, I think now than they were like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But because like, I don't know that consent was not really a huge topic of discussion in like my high school sex ed.
Yeah.
And I think that they're doing a little bit better now. But what I liked about this book is Reyes takes it a step further in that they talk about consent about in terms of not just like, you know, can we or can we not have sex, but like, hey, can I touch you? Can I hug you? Is it okay if I hold your hand? Like, it just it really what I think they do is they demonstrate that the issue of consent isn't just like, you know, should we be physically intimate, but like in it should be present at every step of a relationship, you know?
Yeah.
That should be an ongoing conversation, which we now know consent needs to be ongoing and enthusiastic and all that stuff. But like, I think that the author just did a really great job of showing what consent looks like in like big and small ways throughout the course of a relationship. So The Luis Ortega Survival Club by Sonora Reyes. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Consent is so, I think, like you said, we're better than we were 20 years ago. But even like going as far as like expecting kids to, you know, automatically hug people and stuff like that, I feel like the conversation is changing around that. Like you said, like even smaller areas of consent, not just the, you know, big act, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
Which is awesome to see. So, yes, all of these great books. We have some more coming. We're going to hear really quickly from our sponsor and then get right back to it. Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read. And I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer, always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawke, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books in all her dazzling perfection to give a reading, Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawke on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have 7 great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's like the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number 6. So if he is to have 7 great loves, does that mean his time with Irena is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first-generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode. Okay, so next book I have is actually one that was released in 2023, finally. it is Invisible Sun by Kim Johnson. And oh my goodness, so good. So it opens with, if you're familiar with Ralph Ellison, you'll probably be like, oh, that kind of sounds familiar. Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. I have not read that book in its entirety, but I have read like the first few pages, and I remember it speaking on, basically it's speaking on the Black American experience during the time that the author wrote it. I believe it was in the 50s, but I may be off by some years. So in that book, he talks about how being Black is to be invisible, basically. And when people do see you, they project this narrative onto you. So they don't really see the true you. So I'm saying that because with Kim Johnson's Invisible Sun, in the beginning, it opens with like a nod to Invisible Man. But here, the main character, Andre, he was arrested and sent to juvenile hall for a crime he didn't commit because he was hanging out with what basically his friends were stealing things from other teenagers at parties, and they got caught. One of the friends was white, one of the friends was Black. And then he gets arrested, and he, being loyal to his friends, he doesn't rat them out, but he actually wasn't the one stealing. And then someone plants some stuff in his locker, which is way dirty. Yeah. So I say all that. So the nod to Invisible Man starts in the beginning because Andre is like, you know, it used to be that I was invisible in a way. Because his neighborhood in Portland, Oregon is becoming gentrified and stuff like that. And he already sees the differences in how he gets treated versus the white boys his age. Without even being told, he knows that, like, he already sees the small differences, differences that add up to big differences. So he's like, I would rather be invisible because when I'm seen, I get sent to juvenile hall, basically. Mm-hmm. So the book opens up, he's getting released. Like, we're literally in the car with him. He's driving home to his grandparents' house, and he knows, like, everyone's super disappointed in him. And he really doesn't, he's not one to really, like, be in the streets and stuff like that. And even if he did, even if he was someone who was, you know, kids make mistakes. Literally, your brain is not finished developing, so it's like, you know. But he really just was like a kid who liked to hang out with his friends and, you know, go swimming and make silly YouTube videos and stuff like that before everything happened. But now he comes back and it's just like Kim Johnson does such a great job of like, I feel like, I don't know, it just feels like I understand what he's going through without it being overly explained. And it just like, it's really like, it's just really sad. And I just feel all the emotions that he feels and the pop culture references that he mentions and the way he speaks and the way the character speaks. It all just feels very natural. Like I'm like having a peek into someone's brain, really. So it's also happening February or so, February 2020, which is like 5 minutes before the catastrophe. So it's leading up to that as well. So anyway, okay, so Gavin was this white kid and Eric was the Black kid. Those were his two friends who were actually guilty of doing stuff, more so Gavin. So here's what happens. Andre gets framed. He still doesn't rat his friends out. But Eric, his Black friend who was adopted by a white family, the white family, the Whitakers, the father, the patriarch of the Whitakers, he hires an attorney for Andre to help him. But it comes later. It comes after he was already framed. So he does get help in that way because his family is kind of, Andre's family is kind of struggling to make ends meet. So once he gets out, he goes back to the Whitakers' house and he is excited to see his little boo-boo thing, Sierra, who was Eric's biological sister, who he has a major crush on. And he's eager to hang out with the Whitakers and try to get some normalcy back. But here's the thing. When he gets there, he asks for Eric. Remember, Eric is Sierra's brother. Eric is one of the kids who's actually involved with the wrongdoing. When he asks where Eric is, Sierra like storms out and he finds out that Eric has been missing since he went to juvenile hall. And no one knows where Eric is. So it's like one of the other kids the Whitakers adopted, Louise, he's like, oh, well, would you want to like sucker punch him because he, you know, left you hanging, like left you out for dead, basically, to take the rap. And Andre's like, yeah, I would like to talk to him about that, but I also just want to know that he's okay. Because part of the reason Andre took the rap and didn't mention Eric was because he knew Eric had had a hard life up until that point, going from foster home. Eric and Sierra, as siblings, had gone from foster home to foster home, and he was just trying to save him that heartache, even though Eric was, like, low-key guilty. So he's just like, yeah, I would like to sucker punch him. but also, where, like, is he good? Like, where is he? How is he just missing for all this time? And y'all are just like, oh, he's gone. So there's something weird going on with Eric's disappearance. And not everything about the Whitakers is as it seems. So as Andre investigates things and he deals with being out of juvenile hall and everything that comes with that, and it's a lot that comes with that, he's also trying to find out where Eric is and get to the bottom of what Eric's disappearance has to do with him going to juvenile hall. So, you see what I'm saying? That's what I said. That's what I said. All right? No spoilers. Invisible Sun by Kim Johnson. I'm just saying.
That sounds really good.
Yes.
And I did not know about the Invisible Man sort of connections there, but now I'm even more intrigued. So, awesome. All right. My next pick is A Long Stretch of Bad Days by Mindy McGinnis, which also, if you've been listening to this podcast at all, I think you know how much I really enjoyed Mindy McGinnis's previous two books, which were Edgar Allan Poe retelling set against rural Ohio.
Ooh.
And they go dark in like a really fun way. So this one is kind of similar to those books in that it's also set in rural Ohio, and it also deals with like small towns, small town secrets. You know, you've got like this sharp divide between like people who have money versus people who don't have money. Or in this case, the people who have the appearance of money and like the pedigree, and then like people who don't. So this one is about two teenage girls. One is from a more privileged family where like her family has just kind of been around for a while. Like they live in a nice house because it's like the family house. It's like a nice like three-story Victorian. And then the other girl, her family lives in, you know, a trailer park, and they are sort of pitted and thrown together, not pitted against each other, but thrown together because they have discovered that due to their high school counselor's alcoholism, they are both missing one credit that they need in order to graduate.
What?
Yeah.
What?
And I know. So, of course, for, like, one of the girls, it's like, oh, no, this is, like, a nightmare because I'm going off to college. I need to be able to graduate. For the other girl, it's kind of like, you know, nobody in my family has ever graduated from high school before, so it would be a big deal if I can graduate. So they decide to start working together on a independent study project where they're supposed to explore the history of their town and do a podcast about it. So, yeah, seems pretty straightforward, right? But what they decide to do is focus on their town's long stretch of bad days, which was this period in the 90s where within 1 week they had a murder, like their only murder, and then a devastating tornado that razed half the town. And then they also had a flood that very tragically killed like every dog at the animal shelter.
Oh my God.
I know. So it's really sad. And so they decide that they're going to do these podcast episodes on the long stretch of bad days. But in the course of their research for this, they encounter a missing persons case, which is that like, there's this teenage girl that went missing during this long stretch of bad days, and nobody ever investigated her disappearance because she slipped through the cracks. And so now that they know that this girl is missing and that nobody ever went looking for her, and then like she was reported missing or recorded as missing, and then she was just kind of reported as a runaway. And they think like, what if something happened to her? And then they're starting to find like increasing evidence that something bad happened to her. And yeah, it was really fascinating. I liked how the mystery came together. It had a lot of really good elements. I also liked the tension between the two girls because they obviously have different motivations and different goals, and they're coming from very different places in life. But they have this really great, easy sort of dynamic where, you know, you can see them being friends. friends, despite the fact that, like, they really get on each other's nerves and they have very differing ideas of how this podcast ought to go. It was funny. It was kind of dark. Not as dark as the Edgar Allan Poe retellings get, but it was really fascinating, and I loved how everything came together. So that is A Long Stretch of Bad Days by Mindy McGinnis. Definitely pick it up if you like cold case sort of mysteries, but also small town, like dark small town dynamics. It was really good.
This one escaped my, flew over my, and this just came out in March too. Yeah. I literally just added it to my TBR on Goodreads. I was like, let me not forget to add this.
Yes.
Cover's also kind of cool too.
The cover is kind of creepy. Yeah,
it's fitting. It seems like, yeah, that sounds really good. Yes. So my final one, I think probably that we will have time for. I was like, all right, you know, I like, you know, I like dark stuff. And I feel like the books I've mentioned so far have dealt with some very heavy things. This next book is a manga, and it is like the polar opposite of the other things that I've mentioned so far in this episode, as well as the last full episode we did where I was just like, you know, in my dark era. I really like this manga. It's called Cat Plus Gamer by Wataru Naratani. And I like it because it's so like, if you want like a cozy little, like a cozy cleanse, it is perfect for that. It's super cute. It has some creative little elements to it. I've read two of the volumes. So it's just Cat Plus Gamer Volume 1 and the same title, but Volume 2. Volume 3 comes out later this year. I have not gotten my paws on that yet, but I will soon, hopefully. So it's about Riko, who is a 29-year-old office worker in Japan. And she is like super obsessed with video games. And she's the type who like, she goes into work and she goes home. And a lot of people like, they try to, like, the office workers, they, like, socialize after work. They go for drinks, la, la, la. But she's, like, to them, from their perspective, they're, like, oh, my God, she's such a hard worker. She's efficient. She gets her work done. She goes home. She's, like, not playing games. Ha, 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 pun intended. But she is playing games. The reason she doesn't hang out with them after and the reason she seems so serious to them is because she goes straight home and she plays games, like, hardcore. Like, she is super into games. So one day, the security guard for the office, he's, like, oh, I found this kitten. It seemed to be by itself. Like, does anybody want to take care of it? I don't know what to do with this little kitten. And before she even thinks of what she's doing, she agrees to take it. And people are like, oh, what? You miss, you know, no nonsense. I go straight home from work every day. I don't go drinking with everybody. And so she's like, yeah, why not? It's cute. So she takes the cat home, the kitten, and then once she gets home, she's like, whoa, I have never had a cat before. What do I do? And so it's just kitten hijinks ensue, basically. She goes to the pet store and she gets like all this stuff, kitten supplies, and the person is helping her. There's a lot of like humor throughout. It's genuinely like giggle worthy and stuff like that. And then there's this cute thing where she equates the kitten's progress, like the stuff the kitten does, she equates it to like leveling up, like in an RPG or something, like in a video game. I don't know if you're familiar with RPG, but I was a nerd, so role-playing game. So it'll do, you know, funny like kitten things like, I don't know, learn to jump higher. And then it's like, oh, jumping increased by 1 point or something. It's really cute. I really, really liked it. And again, it's like kind of like a slice of life, lighthearted, cozy thing. And it reminded me of when I would first, like whenever I first get kittens, it's like very perfectly encapsulates that. So it's super cute. Again, Cat Plus Gamer, Volumes 1 and 2 by Wataru Naratani.
Awesome. That sounds cute.
It's so cute.
My next pick is North Ranger by Ray Terciero and Bree Indigo. And I did talk about this one on, I think, my last extra credit episode. So I'll just kind of mention it really quickly because I finally read it and I loved it so much. So it is a retelling of Northanger Abbey, but it's set in a rural Texas ranch area. And it is about Cade, who is super into horror movies and loves like getting spooked out by all sorts of horror. And he and his stepdad have to basically go and work on this ranch for the summer because the family is struggling with money and this ranch work will be pretty lucrative and help out the family quite a bit. So he reluctantly goes off with his stepdad and they're working at this ranch. And the only thing that makes it even slightly bearable is that the ranch owner's son, Henry, is really hot, really sweet, likes horror movies as well. And they have this friendship and Cade has this giant crush on Henry. But he also feels like Henry is kind of holding back with like, you know, really letting him get to know him because there are certain secrets that Henry is keeping and he won't talk about the death of his mom. And there are rumors that kind of float around and certain things are being said about Henry and his dad and his family. And, you know, Cade just doesn't know how Henry's mom even died or what happened to her. So his imagination starts running wild with him. And he starts thinking of all these terrible, awful things. And he has to figure out, you know, is something, you know, nefarious really going on here? Can he trust Henry? And there are some catastrophic misunderstandings throughout this graphic novel, but I really liked it. I liked the romance aspect. It was really sweet. There's also, you know, some really good sort of discussions about what it means to be queer in a rural area and also like why Cade as a gay teenage boy really identifies with horror novels or horror movies. Which I thought was, you know, really interesting and insightful. So also, I think this one just gets credit for like one of the more interesting and unique retellings of Jane Austen because
I think so.
Yeah, it's queer. It's set in this rural Texas area. It's all about ranch hands. I really liked it. So that is North Ranger by Ray Terciero and Bree Indigo. And I just wanted really quickly to shout out one of my favorite reads that I've read this year that actually came out last fall, and that is The Do-Over by Lynn Painter. So this one came out back in November, and I read it earlier this year, I think in March. And oh my gosh, this book is so funny. So if it's like, if you like Groundhog Day, like that idea of like a time loop, but this one's set on Valentine's Day and it's about a girl who is all set to have like her best Valentine's Day ever. She wants to tell her boyfriend that she loves him for the first time. And from the moment she wakes up, everything is like disaster, disaster, disaster. And it all culminates when she catches her boyfriend making out with his ex and she breaks up with him. Yeah. Yeah. He's just making out with his ex on Valentine's Day, right before about to tell him that she loves him. Mm-mm. And she's like devastated by this. And so, you know, she goes to her grandmother's house and she's like, you know, eating ice cream and being sad. And then when she wakes up the next morning, it's like Valentine's Day all over again. But this time she knows that her boyfriend's going to cheat on her and that all these bad things are going to happen. And so she decides that she's going to kind of have a little bit of fun with this timeline and try to get things to go her way. But when things don't go her way after multiple tries, she decides to go really off the rails. And it is so funny. And I was super engaged the entire time. It has some really great hijinks. It's just, like I said, one of my favorite reads that I've read this year. One of my favorite YA contemporary romances that I've read in a while. So, The Do-Over by Lynn Painter.
And that one has a lot of, adding it to my Goodreads real quick. That one has a lot of ratings on Goodreads, too.
Yeah.
It's like 30, over 30,000, and it just came out. Like, you know, there's some books on there that are on there for years and, you know, have like 1,000 or less and are very good, but this just came out in November last year, and it has 30,000.
Yeah. Lynn Painter's, I think, her books are really popular. I think she gets a lot of traction, like, on TikTok, which is not a place that I hang out very often, but I know that she gets a lot of traction over there. And But I'm like, her books are so good, so, like, I get why they're so popular. So
makes sense.
Yes. I loved it. So. All right. Well, we could keep talking about all the books that we've loved this year, because there are more, but I guess we have to wrap things up or something.
I guess. Whatever.
Well, Yeah. Well, thank you so much for tuning in this week. And you can always leave us feedback on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and it lets us know how we're doing. But it also helps others to find us, which we appreciate. And if you want to get in touch with us directly, you can always email us at heyya@bookriot.com. And finally, don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, and of course, all things bookish. Thank you to today's sponsors for making the show possible. And thanks to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink, for making us sound great. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Tears of Price. And Erica, what about you?
On Twitter at @Erica_EZE_.
Awesome. Well, you will hear from us again in 2 weeks. But until then, happy reading.
Happy reading.